to Libya now, our other big story. And while the international community debates what to do, Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi bombs his own people and appears to be moving toward a final offensive to retake the rebel city of Benghazi. Wira Davis from the BBC filed this dispatch from Tripoli.
Colonel Gaddafi's troops are slowly pushing eastwards across hundreds of miles of desert towards what could be a final battle for the rebel stronghold of Benghazi. Each day the front line is pushed back a little bit more. The latest clashes are reported to be taking place around the coastal town of Brega. Ras Lanouf, an important oil terminal a few miles up the coast, was captured a couple of days ago. The government's superior air power in particular is taking a heavy toll on rebel fighters. Increased international support for the idea of a no-fly zone being imposed on Libya may come too late for the anti-government forces, who are unable to match the superior weaponry of their opponents. Wira Davis, BBC News, Tripoli.
So with that dispatch from Tripoli, we may have reached a point of no no-fly zone as the international community debates what to do. Professor George Joffe joins us once again. He's an expert on North Africa at Cambridge University. He joins us from the UK. Professor, are we past the point where a no-fly zone could even be effective in Libya?
No, not at all. There's still a very large struggle to come over the question of Benghazi. And there, undoubtedly, Colonel Gaddafi will have to use his air power if he's going to try to penetrate the city's defenses. And beyond that, too, there's the question of the other towns on the coastline of eastern Libya and the border with Egypt. So I don't think there's yet a question that the no-fly zone is past its useful used by date at all.
But haven't we reached a point where the best a no-fly zone can do at this point is to partition the country, to basically hold back Gaddafi's forces against Benghazi? But you can't pull Gaddafi out of Tripoli with a no-fly zone.
Well, first of all, it was never the case that you were going to beat Colonel Gaddafi with a no-fly zone. That would have helped to weaken him, but he was always in firm control of large parts of Tripolitania. Secondly, in Tripolitania, there are still areas and pockets of resistance to his rule. So it's by no means a foregone conclusion that he will now simply be able to take Benghazi and thereby restore his rule. And I think alongside that, one needs to remember that Benghazi is a city of 2 million people. Taking it is not going to be easy. And during that process, the colonel's forces are going to be weakened. And in the end, the real threat to Colonel Gaddafi is the loss of confidence amongst his own supporters inside Tripoli and an internal coup that removes him.
Professor George Joffe at Cambridge University, we want to use the benefit of your historical background to take us through some of those terms you just used. Tripolitania, what does that refer to? Where does it come from? And are there names for the other parts of the country that are not in Muammar Gaddafi's control?
Yes, indeed, there are. Libya basically consists of three areas. One is Cyrenaica, around what used to be the old Greek settlement of Cyrene, now Albaida. And that's in the east. And that consists really of the Jebel al-Akhdar and the desert behind it. And then in the west, and traditionally associated with Tunisia, is Tripolitania, named after the area behind the town of Tripoli. And then in the deep south, right in the heart of the desert, is a third area, the Fezzan, around the town of Sebha. And that was always dominated by Saharan trade routes. And the three pieces together were brought together into a single state by Italy after 1911, when it invaded and occupied what then became Libya.
And, of course, the overlay in modern Libyan history is, of course, the oil wealth that exists. So what is the state right now militarily of that oil production facility? We heard over the weekend that at least two of the areas of Brega and Ras Lanouf might be back under Gaddafi's control.
But they're really only the oil export points. The oil fields themselves lie deep inside the desert, mainly in central Libya, in an area called Sirtica, after the Gulf of Sirt. Now, those are at the moment effectively under the control of Colonel Gaddafi, but the operating companies, and they're all Western companies, are themselves subject to the vagaries of security, and they've reduced some of their production, but production is still taking place. There are some oil fields in eastern Libya, too, and they export their oil through Tobruk. And that means that the rebel groups in control of Benghazi do control some of the oil. And the real question is the degree to which Western oil companies operating inside Libya are prepared to operate under the Gaddafi regime, or whether eventually sanctions will be placed on them, as the United States did in the 1980s.
So, Brooke, of course, a familiar battlefield from World War II. Professor George Jaffe, finally, before we go, forgive me if I sound like an easily distracted person in the media, but I'm wondering if the Egyptian pro-democracy movement would have moved as quickly if the entire world wasn't watching. Certainly the focus of the world's media is on Japan, not on Libya. Is that an opportunity for Colonel Gaddafi, do you think?
Well, it may well be, but I'm not certain that the colonel is really concerned with that. His concern is purely domestic. He wants to reassert his control over Libya. He wants to do so for personal reasons, because he regards the rebellion as a personal affront to his ideas, his values, and his experience as a politician. So he probably doesn't fully appreciate the implications of the way in which media attention may have been distracted by Japan.
But do you think he gets some unintentional cover from the distraction?
Oh, I think he probably does. But don't worry, the moment his forces begin to approach Benghazi, I promise you media attention is going to swing straight back again.
And finally, is there a clock ticking on the effectiveness of a no-fly zone to protect Benghazi?
Yes, of course. The longer it's delayed, the less effective it's going to be, simply because of the time it will require to put it in place and the decision as to who it is who's actually going to do the hard work. My guess is it's probably going to be the United States. But it may also be European powers like France and Britain, and even perhaps Egypt in the Arab world. But all that requires coordination.
Indeed.
And the more the delay there is, the less effective it will be.
The suggestion there from Professor George Jaffe that soon the U.S. will have to put its military cards on the table, whether it endorses a no-fly zone. He's an expert on North Africa at Cambridge University. He spoke with us from the U.K. Again, back to our top story. Japan's nuclear emergency continues to escalate, as does the death toll, as we're covering the aftermath from the earthquake and tsunami from last Friday.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.